This is the beginning of a new millennium. And sometimes I wondered if I would ever see the year 2000 because of the way things are going. Well, I have seen it. And how much longer it may continue as it is a matter of question in my own mind. This morning we want to talk about some more things about the home. We're going to look at the things that have attacked the home. This message will not be exactly like the type of sermons I normally bring. There are times that you have to get down into some details about things. And when I mean details, I'm talking about you have to call names and places and identify things so everybody knows what you're talking about. And if some of us preachers do not give out some of the information that I'm about to give out, I do not honestly know of anybody else that will ever give it out to the people. There are very few that would dare to do so. So turn in your Bibles to the book of Proverbs, chapter 19, and we're going to read only the 13th verse, and it certainly does show how that the devil attacks the home. In fact, the devil ruined the very first home that God ever set up on this earth. And that home was ruined by what happened to the two that were driven out of paradise. And then the effects of it was also seen in the fact that the first baby born became the first murderer. So the devil wrecked the very first home that God ever established in the Garden of Eden. He's been after the home ever since that time. And he's not ready to surrender yet. And I think because he knows he has but a short time, he is making an all-out effort to destroy the family as God intended that family to be. Now let's read the verse there in Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 13. A foolish son is the calamity of his father, and the contentions of a wife are a continual dropping. That sets forth trouble in the home. While I will not especially identify one group, I will briefly talk about them at the very outset. I believe that most all of the journalists in this country are socialists and leftists. And so they're constantly trying to make us believe that people in America just simply do not like marriage as God intended. And so they're all time stressing in the news media the ills of broken homes. Sad to say, there's a lot of truth in what they're saying, because a lot of it is going on. But they would give us the impression that extramarital affairs are all right, that premarital sex is all right, if you listen to the brainwashing that they're doing. And any time that there is a presentation of what we would call the traditional family, we're being told that that is on the way out. And traditional families are pictured on the news media as outmoded and outdated. And so they are attacking the home in that they present it in a very unfavorable light in the news that they give out. And they tell us that the family is in trouble. That is very true. But looking at some of the statistics that I have put out by Christian groups, the family may not be in quite as much trouble as they would have us to believe. They probably overstated the case. But I do want to talk this morning about some things that attack the family, and I can't deal with all of them. There's too many. I'm going to mostly zero in on three things, and all of them are related. And it may sound like at times I'm almost repeating myself. But I'm going to start, as the old man said, at the starting place. There was a man that was born in 1818, and he died in 1883. And he has done more to destroy the home than any man that ever lived in the last 200 or 300 years. His name was Karl Marx. He is known as the father or founder of communism. Very remarkable man in many ways. He was born in Prussia to a very respectable German family. And he went to some of the great German universities, including the University of Bonn, where he associated with a lot of free thinkers, liberal theologians, and all sorts of people. You have to bear in mind that about this time is when higher criticism of the Bible was so prevalent in Germany. It was also about the time that Charles Darwin was coming along, and all these other things were happening in Europe about this time. But anyway, this man was a Jew. That cannot be denied, because he was. I want to give you a few facts about this man, Karl Marx. He never had in his entire life a lasting friend. He never at any time held a stable job anywhere, any place. Though he had a university diploma. We don't call him Dr. Marx for without cause. He was a very educated man. He mostly lived off of the labors of other people. He even pleaded for funds from his good friend, Frederick Engels, who often would give him a handout like. Now, when he went off to college, he just stayed there almost like a professional student and was called by some a college bum, because that's about all he did, spend his daddy's money, have a big time, and he didn't do very well in his studies. So finally, he got out with a good degree with a little shady operation that I won't go into. Well, he married. He had three children that died of malnutrition. In other words, he was so lazy he wouldn't work and support his family, and three of them starved to death. He had two daughters and a son-in-law that committed suicide. Nearly all of them were buried in a pauper's grave. The neighbors had to give him the money to bury. Karl Marx had an illegitimate child by the maid that kept his home. Somebody said, now a fellow like that surely couldn't influence anybody. Well, you'd think that he couldn't. I mean, you'd think that he wouldn't influence even his next door neighbor. He didn't have over 10 or 12 people at his funeral when he died. I don't know why they were there for some reason. But little known to most people is that Karl Marx started out as a Christian. He even wrote poems about Christ. I've read them. I've got them. He never did at any time in his life deny that God existed. Now we have a lot of modern day communists that are atheists, but Karl Marx was not an atheist. That shocks a lot of people. He hated God. He intended to dethrone God. He never denied that God existed. And so far as I'm able to tell, Frederick Engels never denied that God existed either. As a matter of fact, wrote a poem about Christ just before he died. I read it. But he was a Satanist. Now somebody said, that's quite a statement there. How do you know? Well, I'm going to read one of his poems and I'll let you decide what he is. The poem that he wrote is called Human Pride. Now, he, in this poem, it makes quite a confession. He admits that he does not want to improve the world, that he does not intend to reform or revolutionize the world. He intends to destroy the world and enjoy the destruction. Now, listen to what he said. With disdain, I will throw my gauntlet full in the face of the world and see the collapse of this pygmy giant, whose fall will not stifle my odor. Then I will wander godlike and victorious through the ruins of the world and give my words an active force. I will feel equal to the Creator. That last statement sounds like the devil in Isaiah 14. It said, I will be like the Most High. So he really never denied that God existed. He just hated God and intended to try to destroy God. Have you ever wondered why he had that big old bushy head of hair when everybody else, you know, had their hair cut a lot, probably a lot like mine in that day and time, especially in the universities? That was the hairdo of the high priest of Satanism in that day and time. Now, do a little study on that. We have a book in our store, was Karl Marx, a Satanist, by Richard Wurmbrand, and he has got irrefutable proof in favor of the fact that he certainly was a devil worshiper. Now, I have given you some facts here about this man, and somebody said, how could he influence anybody? Why would anybody pay any attention to a fellow like that? Well, it's all satanic. You can't explain it any other way. Ordinarily, a man like that wouldn't even get a hearing in his community, let alone throughout the world. But in a manner of speaking, that man is ruling the world today from his grave. Let me give you a few other facts about this man now. The system that he started, called communism at that time, has got a new title today. Today we call it the New World Order. That's the only difference. It's just got a new name. Karl Marx set out to destroy all existing governments, destroy the family, abolish private ownership of property, replace religion with materialism. He said, I will abolish eternal truths, all religion, all morality. That's the father of communism. I have right here in my hand Communist Manifesto by Karl Marx. When I go to get my facts, I always like to get them straight from the horse's mouth. Well, that's what I've done this morning. You can read it for yourself. It's right here in the book. It was written about 1848, I believe, or something like that. It's a modern printing of it. Now, here's what he intends to do. I mean, he's honest. He tells the people what he's going to do. The middle-class family will vanish as a matter of course when its completement vanishes, and both will vanish with the vanishing of capital. Do you charge us with wanting to stop the exploitation of children by their parents? To this crime, we plead guilty. But you will say we destroy the most hallowed relations when we replace home education by social. Now, did you get that last statement? He said we're going to destroy the family, we're going to do away with home education, and we're going to have social education. I mean, he didn't lie. He just told the people what he's going to do right there. I mean, you can read it for yourself. Well, what's he set out to do there? Well, Karl Marx began this idea that was very revolutionary at the time. He said that the kids that people have, they don't belong to the father and the mother. They belong to the state. That was the idea that he put forth. And really, if you read Karl Marx and his teaching, you'll find out that he started also all of this feminist movement that's so prevalent today. Now, his companion in the way, Frederick Engels, who was writing this, incidentally, from the notes of Karl Marx, who had already expired at this time, here's what he says that they're going to do. Now, he's another one of the leaders of communism. It is already clear at this point that the emancipation of a woman, her equalization with man, is and remains impossible so long as a woman is excluded from the productive work of society and remains restricted to private homework. The emancipation of a woman first becomes possible when she is able on an extensive social scale to participate in production and household work, claims her attention only to an insignificant extent. Now, what he's saying there, to put it in plain language, is we're going to have a woman to quit taking care of the house and she's going to go out and make a lot of money for the state. That's what he meant. And this, for the first time, has been made possible by the large-scale industry, which not only admits women labor, admits women's labor over a wide range, but absolutely demands it, and also strives to transform private household work more and more into public industry. That's on page 318 and 319 of A Handbook of Marxism. That's one of the founders of it himself telling you exactly what he intends to do. So much that's going on in the modern world today, little known to the average person, goes back to these two men that I'm telling you about. Their goal was the destruction of the family as we know it. And that's what they set out to do. Now, there's one other thing that came along with Marxism. They said that any sort of sexual act was no more than drinking a cup of water. In other words, there's no rules and regulations about sex. Isn't it strange that we've been having a sexual revolution in this country? Wonder where it came from. Well, people that discern the times know where it came from. It came from Marx and Engels. That's where it all came from. It all started about the mid-1800s there. Now, I hope that you have remembered what I've told you here about Karl Marx. I always liked what Engels said about him one time. He said that he was a monster possessed by 10,000 devils. That's what his friends said about him now. I couldn't agree more with that statement. I think that's absolutely the best statement I ever heard about the man. I think he was possessed of many demons. I think he was a Satanist. And I think everything that he taught was nothing in the world but the blueprint of the devil. And that's why people don't know what's going on. All right, now let's go on to the second thing that I maintain has attacked the home. And I'm going to talk about the public school. It probably should be called the government school, because in fact that's what it is. Now remember, one of the goals of Karl Marx that I read there was, we'll stop education in the home and transfer it to the state. That's how he was going to put forth his program. All right, let's think about the history of our country here. Until the 1800s, all the schools in this country were either operated by a church or they were private schools. There wasn't any government schools as we know them now. And so about the same time that Karl Marx is writing this book, The Communist Manifesto, about 1848 to 50, something like that, that's about the same time over here in this country that we start the government school system. And I'll leave it to you to figure out where it came from. A very great syndicated columnist of our time, a black man, a conservative, bless his heart, one of the few that I know, recently wrote, said, if every parent in America knew what was really going on in the public schools, there would be a revolution. He must know something that everybody else don't know, sound like. All right, let's talk a little bit about the present day school system, how it all started. When I was going to school, I heard a lot about this fellow called Horace Mann. And he was made to be a great hero like. Well, since I was kind of brainwashed about him years ago, I hesitated to believe some of the things I later found out about him. He was, in fact, just about an atheist, if not one outright. And he was the first man in the education system that began to say, we have got to get rid of religion and morality. It's got to go. Now, they're hiding that in most of the textbooks today, but I'm telling you the truth about it. And so he humanized the whole American education system in the 19th century, and he set out to destroy all religious teaching. And then the next fellow that comes along is called the father of the progressive education movement. His name is John Dewey. You probably heard of the Dewey Decimal System for our libraries. Well, it's named after that fellow. But did you know that he was an atheist? Did you know that he was one of the first members of the American Humanist Association that was brought into being in 1933, and that he was one of the writers of the Humanist Manifesto? They've written number one and number two. I understand number three is out now. I haven't seen that. But I intend to try to get a copy of it. Now, what were the ideas of this man that was more or less the father of our modern education system? What did he really believe? What was he trying to teach the people? Well, I'll just have to open up the book like the man said, and we'll find out what he believed, because we'll just read in the writing here. This is Humanist Manifesto 1 and Humanist Manifesto 2, and we'll begin to see what he really did believe and just find out for ourselves. But anyway, to save some time, and I don't want to take up a lot of time with all this morning, I'm going to read you from Humanist Manifesto 2. Now, he signed number 1, and I don't think he was around to sign number 2. He no doubt would have signed it. But anyway, it's basically the same, and so not to read from two of them. I'm just going to read now. This is page 13 here. As in 1933, humanists still believe that traditional theism, that's a belief in God now, especially faith in the prayer-hearing God, assumes to love and care for persons, to hear and understand their prayers, and to be able to do something about them is an unproven and outmoded faith. Salvationism, based on mere affirmation, still appears as harmful, diverting people with false hopes of heaven hereafter. Reasonable minds look to other means for survival. In other words, all this stuff about God and being saved in the Bible, to all of these big founders of our American education system, was a bunch of foolishness. They didn't believe anything like we do about this, you see. All right, let's keep going now. I'd like to read the whole thing to you, but I'm not. All right, let's go over now to page 16 here, and I'll read some more stuff. Even at this late date in human history, certain elementary facts based upon the critical use of scientific reason have to be restated. We find insufficient evidence for belief in the existence of a supernatural. In other words, there is no God. It is either meaningless or irrelevant to the question of the survival and fulfillment of the human race. As non-theist, we begin with humans, not God. Nature, not divinity. In other words, we don't believe in any God but nature. They were pantheists. New Agers believe the same thing. He goes on then down here at the next section here. Too often traditional faiths encourage dependence rather than independence, obedience rather than affirmation, fear rather than courage. More recently, they have generated concerned social action with many signs of relevant appearings in the wake of God is dead theology. But we can discover no divine purpose or providence for the human species. While there is much that we do not know, humans are responsible for what we are and will. No deity will save us. We must save ourselves. Now that's the propaganda they want to put in the textbooks. Not only want to put in it, it's already there. You just didn't know about it. It's been there almost 100 years. It's getting worse, is the only difference. So, well, what did they believe about the home and ethics and all that? Well, here I'm on page 17. We affirm that moral values derive their source from human experience. Not the Bible now. Ethics is autonomous and situational. That's Hugh Hefner's situation ethics. Right there it is. Needing no theological or ideological sanction. In other words, we don't need anything from the Bible to tell us what's right and wrong. Ethics stems from human need and interest. To deny this distorts the whole basis of life. Human life has meaning because we create and develop our future. In other words, man is his own savior and his own God. That's what they're saying. I mean, it's plain language there. Then look at a few other statements. And I'll show you that they're out to have a world community and they're just going to destroy all the nations, going to do away with all national distinction. Over here on page 23, what more daring a goal for humankind than for each person to become in ideal as well as practice a citizen of a world community? Now, you don't talk about a one world government. Here's the fellows that planned all that. They planned it all. Now then, people tell me that it's all right to teach this in the classroom because it's not a religion. I'm going to prove by their writings that they claim it is a religion. Now listen to this, page 24. These affirmations, talking about all this manifesto 1 and 2, these affirmations are not a final credo or dogma, but an expression of a living and growing faith, F-A-I-T-H. So now people tell me secular humanism is not a religion. Well, they say so in the book that it is. So here's what we have going on a lot of times in the public school. You cannot teach what the Bible says, but they are teaching the religion of secular humanism all the time. And what is it? Well, I just told you what it teaches, what it believes and all of that. They say that their truth is relative. There's no absolutes. Evolution is a fact. There is no God. There is no soul. They teach children to rebel against their parents, to throw traditional values out the door, to ignore all sorts of discipline. I wonder if the world learned anything from Hitler sometime. You see what he did in Germany, the first thing he did, take the guns away from the people, number one. And then he took over the schools and started Nazi propaganda in them. And he had so much Nazi propaganda going on until the children turned in their parents and their parents were executed. So that is a terrible thing. Well, they got about the same thing planned for the good old United States of America. And we just are not aware of what's going on. So really, our modern education system is socialistic and totalitarian. And the educators all believe that the children belong to the state and not to the parents. And so the whole program of the present education system in our school is to overthrow the rights of the parents and to turn the kids over to the state. Long-sought plan and dream of Dr. Karl Marx. Now let's go on and talk about this New World Order, which I'm pleased just to call it what it is, the United Nations. That's all I know to call it. These global socialists in the United Nations want to do away with parents' rights and set up what they call children's rights. That kind of shocked me when I first heard it, because when I was growing up, I never heard anything about children's rights. Best I could tell, the parents were pretty well in control of everything when I was growing up. But everybody today seems to want the little kids. We'll get them. We'll brainwash them. We'll teach them. False cults want them. The communists want them. The global socialists want them. Even we Christians want them, that we might teach them the truth. The idea that children belong to the state and not to the parents has been popularized by a modern book that's in print, circulating right now, written by our president's wife, called It Takes a Village to Raise a Child. That's the most socialistic title I ever heard in my life. Think about that. Father and mother hadn't got enough sense to raise the children. They got to have the state to come in and help them out. In other words, mom and daddy can't be mom and daddy. The state's going to be mom and daddy. God help us. What we need is mothers and fathers that will bring up their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Mothers and fathers that will have some discipline for their children, have some moral teaching for their children, tell them about God and the Bible. We don't need all this socialistic stuff. There has been a United Nations Convention on the Rights of Children. I regret to say that Madeleine Albright, our ambassador to the United Nations on February 16, 1995, signed this treaty. She brought it back home with her, and our president signed it, I believe, shortly after that, maybe just a few days, the best I remember. I don't have the date before me right now. Now, if you know anything about the Constitution of the United States, you know this. Whenever the Senate ratifies any treaty with another country, that becomes the law of the land. Go read the Constitution. That's what it says. Nothing wrong with the Constitution. It's just what they're trying to do with it right now. Ever since the president signed this treaty that guarantees the rights of the children, he's been trying to get the Senate to pass it. So far, he can't get enough votes. Thank God for that. I hope he never does get enough. Now, if that treaty is passed and becomes the law of the land here throughout, well, I think over 100 nations has already signed it. But our Senate has not ratified it. It's not yet the law of the land in our country. Somebody said, well, now, if it's ratified, what will it do? It'll destroy the home as we know it in this country. That's what it'll do. I'm going to read you some of the articles in it. I don't have the actual document. I'm in the process of getting that, but I've got excerpts out of it. It'll give children the right to abortion without any consent of the parent. You'll give them the right to access the media any way they want to. Now, if you want me to put that in plain language, if your son or daughter wants to watch the Playboy channel on television, you can't do a thing in the world to stop it. I'm going to put it to you where you can understand it. If they want to learn how to build an atomic bomb to blow up a building, there's nothing you can do about it if this treaty is ratified. The children will be guaranteed the rights to choose their own playmates. If they want to run around with perverts or anything else, there will be absolutely nothing in the world the parents can do about it. Nothing. And then anything that infringes on the right of a child will be prosecuted by the state. And in many cases, according to the provisions of it, if you don't obey their mandates, then the kids will be taken out of your home by social services. This child right thing also says that spanking of children is a criminal act of child abuse. I'm quoting almost word for word now. That would make all of the parents that believe in spanking their children instant criminals the first time they did it. That's a terrible thing to think about when you think about all the verses in the Bible that talk about how that children are to be disciplined. And of course we know even if that treaty is passed, there's going to be millions of Christians, Jews, and probably other people that just simply will not obey it. I wouldn't obey it. I'd buck them on it. I don't have many children left, but I would buck them on it. But you see, this is all a part of the one world system to educate our children for the new world order. Now remember I read from that humanist manifesto, they're trying to build a world community. They're not trying to build up the United States. They're not trying to build up Canada or Australia or England or any other country. They're trying to build a one world government of Antichrist. That's all in the world it is. Another thing that is in the provisions of that treaty is that if you teach religion to your children, you are guilty of child abuse. You're trying to warp the poor little boy and girl's minds and they just won't permit it. Now think about teaching the Bible, teaching morality to your children being a crime against the state. That's enough there to make a man about ready to get his gun marched to Washington, to tell you the truth. When you think about that, that's terrible. And so these global socialists, they want to take over all of the control of the children and take over the control of their minds. And so mom and daddy won't have too much to do with it. And if they try to do anything, then they'll go to jail or they'll have their kids removed from their home. Now that is the treaty that our president is trying to get passed by the Senate in the country, our country right now, this morning even. Probably work up there working on it if I had to guess. Well, there's one other thing that I want to mention before I finish here. And it's not as closely related as these other three are. They're all a chip off the same block. That's what I wanted you to see. I think that our industrial age has taken a toll on the family. I really do. I can remember when my wife and I first got married, she worked. And I told her she had to quit because I told her that I would earn a living. It was an insult to me that she had to work to help me support the family. That was a long time ago. Even my mind seems to have shifted. Whether it shifted the right way or not, something I've often wondered about. But you see what we have today, we have that dream of Karl Marx taking place. We got all the women out in the workforce, and who's taking care of the home? In fact, nobody. That's the whole problem right there. Nobody's taking care of it. Kids are just running loose. Maybe they're in some state nursery of some sort or something like that. Somebody said, well, not every woman works. That's true. And a lot of the men, though, got two jobs. Why? Because we're in an economic rat race. And what we one time thought was luxuries have now become requirements, at least in our minds. And people have to work on Sunday. They got to work just almost all the time. So you just can't get to the house of God. You can't pray. You can't read the Bible. There's just no time for it. Everybody's too busy. Well, I think we lost something when we started this industrial revolution. I think it took a toll on the home. Now, you can say whatever you want to about it. You can justify this and justify that. You still end up with the fact that about the same time all that started, when all this started about juvenile delinquency. I always thought when it first came out, it ought to be called parent delinquency. Because parents make the children what they are. So the sanctity of marriage is disappearing in our generation. Right now, according to the statistics that I read this week, about for every marriage you have one divorce to go with it. That's pretty serious when you think about it. At least you have a divorce for every two marriages, taking the more conservative table that I looked at. It's bad in any respect. So the sanctity of marriage is disappearing, and divorce is more and more becoming acceptable. Now, this may almost shock some of you younger people here today, but I can remember the first time I ever heard about anybody getting a divorce right here in this area where we are right now this morning. And it was the talk of the whole neighborhood because I'd never heard of anything like that before. I said, "You mean a man and his wife is actually going to break up?" And they told me, said, "Yes." And I was shocked. I thought, "Who ever heard of such a thing, you know?" Well, to be honest, at that time, I hadn't heard of very many. And somehow they seemed to stick it out years ago. And now every time they get in a fight, they got to get a divorce, you know, and get separated or something. I don't know. Seems like we just not, either people not made out of as good as stuff, or they don't know how to manage things. I don't know what the problem is. I often wonder about that. You say, "Well, you done said too much." No, I'm telling it like it is. I'll run, as the old man said, before I'll take it back, because I know it's so. But we live in a very bad time for the home. We have the results of this industrial revolution. We have all of these isms that have entered into our government, entered into our education system, even entered into the governments of the whole world as we know it. And the plans of all of them is to kill the home. You ever heard about the marriage penalty? Did you know that married people pay more taxes than people that are not married? That there's a lot of people shacking up because it's cheaper to shack up than it is to get married. So don't tell me that the government is for the home. Our government is against the home, and we might as well admit it. The tax code alone tells us that if we didn't have anything else. So with all of these people against the home, if there was ever a time when our churches need to lay down the law on what the Bible says about the home, it's now. Because we're about the only sensible voice that's being put forth. And so it ought to be preached, and it ought to be taught, and it ought to constantly be discussed. The importance of the home and how to keep the devil out of our home, lest he destroy it. So I tell you, if there's ever a time that we do need to be in church, and we do need to be praying to God and seeking the things of the Lord, it's now. Because the very existence of the home is depending upon this generation, perhaps the next generation, if there be a next generation. So I hope that it will cause us to want to bring up our children in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, and to see the great importance of the home, because that is the basis of society, the church. You destroy the home, and my friend, you don't have anything left. You can't have a school or a church or a nation or anything if you don't have a home. The foundation of it all is the home. And if you destroy the foundation, then what are you going to have left? The whole superstructure will crumble and fall to the ground. And so I believe that we need to stress the sanctity of the home, marriage as God intended, and warn of all of these evil things that are out to destroy our home and our country as well, I might add. God help us to realize the time that we live in. Let us stand, and we shall sing at this time.